Case 43 from the Blue Cliff Record. Dongshan's No Cold or Heat. A monk said to Dongshan, "Cold and heat descend upon us. How can we avoid them?" Dongshan said, "Why don't you go where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "Where is the place where there is no cold or heat?" Dongshan said, "When cold, let the cold kill you. When hot, let the heat kill you." Many years ago, I was a newly minted teacher in the Zen tradition, and I was sitting a sesshin, and there were about 40 of us packed into a zendo, and it was hot, like, you know, one of these 90 plus degree days, and the air conditioning we had at the time was one of those like R2-D2 units that you roll around a house and place it where you want to, and it has, you know, an airflow that flows out through some laundry chute, but as much warm air gets into the house through it all as gets out. It was completely ineffective. The Zendo was very hot. Must have been pretty close to what it was outside. And we came down to sit for the sutra service. And I don't know if you know, but during a sesshin, often the teachers will put on robes. And it includes, you know, there's these white sort of undergarments and then this black robe that goes over it. And then there's actually a kesa, which is a pretty thick, like sheet-like material that you wrap around it all. So you're wearing, you know, a good 3+ layers, actually 4, because there's a shirt that goes under your undershirt. So it's a lot. And I went to sit down at my seat, and during the sutra service, I heard the heat clang on behind me. And this, I was sitting directly in front of this radiator that was cranked up, and it was just emitting like the type of heat that you touch in the winter, it scalds your finger. It was just pouring off heat. And I started to just sweat like you would not believe. Sweat running down my forehead, down my back, down my front. I was just drenched, utterly drenched in sweat. And I was one of the teachers who was supposed to be giving the talk following the sutra service. I couldn't really think about my talk much. And this particular koan came to my mind. So I went upstairs during Kinhin, stood in front of this blower that was upstairs for a minute. And someone came up to me and said, "Oh my gosh, we're so sorry. Someone must have bumped the heat on." And, you know, they had turned it off at that point. And I went down and gave my talk. But it was interesting. It was a powerful thing to practice with this scenario of not picking and choosing, we might say. Deciding to simply let the heat kill me in that moment. Not to complain or break the form. People often who are new to practice wonder about our forms. They might say, "Hey, why do we have to maintain stillness? If I have an itch, it makes me suffer not to scratch it. So why wouldn't I just scratch it?" At a more intense level, at a sesshin, someone might actually be in pain. Now, we don't want to sit through pain that results in or causes injury or exacerbates injury. That's quite different. But we do sit with pain in sesshin. It's a very, everybody who sits sesshin, their back gets very sore and they feel like, oh, I just need to adjust my back a little bit. Can I just, if I could just crack it once, you might think, you know? Maybe at some point you even indulge in that fantasy. And of course it does almost nothing because you're sitting still for hours and hours on end during the day. Your knees can feel red hot sometimes, like they're little volcanoes that are about to blow your kneecaps off. It can be quite a powerful experience of physical pain. And of course, perhaps more to the point, and even in some respects more difficult to deal with, the weather of our mind also changes. We feel these kind of weather patterns roll in, like maybe one morning it's a gray day and you go into the zendo and after breakfast and you're tired and it's day 4 out of 7. You know, you have 3 more days to go and you're exhausted and you're like, why am I even doing this? And you're in a terrible mood and maybe grief has come or some discouragement. Of course, there's another thing we just want to escape. We just want to run the hell out of the zendo and go get some ice cream or something. But we don't. We stay and we stay still and we look into the great matter. We start to get some of the spirit of this koan in this experience of sitting here tonight, even on this warm night. The fans running in the windows make very little difference, perhaps. I've certainly noticed sweat dripping down the back of my neck here a few times tonight. So one of the things that we notice with practice is that the more we indulge our notions about how terrible a situation is, the more terrible it is. In a way, the mind makes things real for us. So, you know, we have this story that if I don't scratch this itch, I'm just going to explode. And if we believe that story, it becomes very difficult to just let it go. But as we practice with time, that experience might actually come to seem even laughable to us. The notion that before we couldn't make it through a period without, you know, scratching our itchy knee becomes like a little bit of a joke. We might notice that the body has these sensations, these little tingles and whatnot, but no story accompanies it. No need, no desperation, no deep belief that this is the end of the world if I don't scratch this thing. No fantasies of bugs crawling all over us. Well, you may have those fantasies now because I've just placed them in there. But we experience the itch just as a simple experience of a kind of physical sensation without a story that attends it. And consequently, it doesn't bother us. We just sit. It's not a problem at all. And people find this hard to believe when maybe it's similar experience with physical pain. Now, again, I'm not saying injury here, but, you know, we sit and the back gets sore and whatnot, and we think, oh, if I don't move, this is suffering. Why would they tell me not to move? We get angry at the tanto who's like, be still. But similarly, you know, this is not a masochistic endeavor that we're doing here. We're not wearing hair shirts. But we do have this expectation of stillness, of a kind of non-reactivity. And again, we come to see over time that it's just kind of, it's like a heat in the body. You know, pain is only suffering when we call it suffering. That may sound ridiculous. But those of us who have sat sesshin or we've sat through long enough periods to experience this have seen for ourselves that it's actually true. And so it is with heat and cold. And of course, this koan is not just about heat and cold. This koan is about all the different versions of suffering and of ourselves that we encounter throughout our lives. As Yamada Roshi comments, the real concern here is not specifically cold or heat, but rather the sufferings of life, the fear of death, and delusion generally. So when the monk asks, cold and heat descend upon us, how can we avoid them? Of course, the question she is asking, how do we avoid suffering? And Tongshan says, why don't you go where there is no cold or heat? This is a wonderful response. A response that we can hear in a couple of different ways. One, we might say, is somewhat facetious. Everywhere you go in the world has cold and heat. Now, however extreme it may be, one version or another, that's not something we avoid. Everywhere we go in life includes some amount of pain and suffering. We all get sick, we get older, we lose people we love and adore. We lose everything. And our hearts break and we fear this and we tremble over this. Maybe even scared about our own deaths. There is no place we can go where there's no pain or suffering. So the monk asks, where is the place where there is no cold or heat? He doesn't quite realize that there's something almost facetious in this. But that's because there's also something real in this statement. And the monk knows that the teacher's offering more than a joke. The teacher's offering a possibility for how we can encounter our lives. He's saying, please explain further, teacher. Where is the place I can go where there's no cold or heat? And Dongshan said, when cold, let the cold kill you. When hot, let the heat kill you. The place we go where there is no cold or heat is precisely the place where there is cold and heat. This is calling on a deep and profound teaching in the Zen tradition, the exact equality of emptiness and form. Yamada goes on, the place where there is neither cold nor heat is right smack in the middle of cold and heat. There's no place to run. Suffering and sadness, sickness and death, I would add anger, grief, jealousy, rage. Whatever it is for which you may judge yourself harshly and say, I need to stop having those thoughts and feelings. All of them arise according to the law of causality, and there is no way we can escape them no matter what we do. But it is in the very midst of suffering that we can become free. As Yamada says, you become completely one with that suffering. There is no other way. If we are on, I like how he puts this, if we are on speaking terms with the essential world of emptiness, even in the midst of great suffering and distress, we will be able to maintain our composure and peace of mind. No matter how much we wiggle and squirm, there is no way we can escape from our present circumstances. We must learn just to give in to our situation, becoming one with those circumstances. So, what is this oneness with our circumstances? I had the opportunity to practice that at that sesshin. Just sweat. Let the sweat roll down your body. Have you ever, maybe perhaps when you were younger or who knows, gotten caught in a rainstorm, and at first you were like, oh, I want to keep my clothes dry, and you had this notion that you could avoid the whole thing somehow. But then you realized you were still, you know, a mile from home. And you weren't going to be able to get under that tree and etc. And you were already wet. And then you gave in. And when you gave in, you realized that you kind of enjoyed it. That you were just wet. That your mind had created this great problem out of becoming wet. But once you allowed yourself to be one with the circumstance, to no longer fight it, it was fine. It was even pleasant. Kind of a warm late spring rain. This morning I woke up. I got out of bed, and for some reason, I just was down. I was sitting there sipping my coffee. In a glorious circumstance. There were flowers in front of me. My cat was sitting next to me on the kitchen table, like purring and falling asleep in a little dash of sunlight. I mean, this is the moment we dream of. And here it was, and I kind of felt like shit. And of course, what arose for me was something like, what is wrong with me? Because that's what the mind does. And immediately I started thinking, huh, I wonder if I can fix something about myself so that I don't feel this way. Then I remembered that I practice Zen. And I just sat. And I realized that after all these years, I've been practicing for about 20 years. I've attended hundreds, 425, I'm making up a number, but a lot of days of sesshin, many more zazen kai, all day sits. And still, in me, there's this tendency to, As feelings arise that I interpret as difficult, I just want to escape them. But fortunately, we have a practice. And this practice is one that cultivates what we describe as two sides of a coin, wisdom and compassion. Allowing the feeling to be there, the anger, the judgments, whatever it is, just let it be. We become one with it. And this is a deeply compassionate response. We are bearing witness to our hearts and minds in a non-judgmental way. Not judging. Just seeing it, as we read in the chant, Awareness is its own action, just letting the judgment happen, letting the feeling happen, but seeing that it is happening. And there's this incredible thing that happens as we practice this. We just soften. We just soften around it. We let ourselves be just as we are. And sometimes that's all we ever really wanted. We think that we want to be different. But maybe all we really need is to kind of be witnessed just as we are. And that doesn't have to be somebody else doing the witnessing. Of course, in practicing this with ourselves, we are also practicing it for our interactions with others who are suffering. Perhaps the things that trigger us the most, we can learn to be with them a little bit more kindly. Give a little more space around them in the same way we give to ourselves when we practice Zazen. And the other aspect or insight that we develop is wisdom. As we sit, as I've said before, we come to see that everything goes its own way. Things don't have a fixed essence in the way we thought they do. So where that initial thought arose, what is wrong with me? Notice how there's a projection of a kind of substance into a substance, the substance of something wrong and that, quote, exists in me. I'm creating all kinds of elements here. Very dualistic thought. Above and beyond the judgment of thinking wrong. But as we sit, time is quite a teacher, and it shows us that the things that we think of as solid lack solidity. They shapeshift, they evolve, including our sense of self. So there really isn't anything to fear. Now, Yamada Roshi puts it even more strongly. He says, we come to rely on the fact that there is actually nothing. This is one way of describing emptiness. I read a blog post by James Ford recently that said, everything is nothing with a twist. And I loved that line. He really explored it. In his first book about practicing Zen, he describes how we need to come to see that there is really nothing. Shunryu Suzuki has a chapter that I think he calls something like Believe in Nothing. Now, we have to be careful here. We're not talking about a metaphysical entity of nothingness that exists in some separate way from everything. Everything is nothing with a twist. This is the exact equality of emptiness and form, and it is the content of our liberation in this practice. And it's not something that we have to invent. It's not something that we have to create. And it is not something that we can think our way to. Thoughts will just continue to divide this from that and project essences and even non-essences into things. That's not what this is about. This is the practice of sitting upright and bearing witness to things exactly as they are, and allowing their boundlessness to reveal itself to us. So, back to our koan. This is why, when we sit, we don't scratch that itch. We use everything as an opportunity to look more deeply, experience everything as a Dharma gate, as a possibility for awakening. When it's hot, let the heat kill you. When it's cold, let the cold kill you. Now, I want to acknowledge that we're emphasizing the practice of Zazen here. In life, we also hold the precepts. Shunryu Suzuki said, "You're all perfect, and you all could use a little improvement." We could all use a little improvement, and we have the precepts as a guide for us in our lives, as a way of meeting this dreamscape that we call life. Self and other manifesting as concepts that help us make our way through. But in Zazen, we come to see that our conceptual maps are limited and inaccurate, and we don't hold them tightly. We just let them go on their own way. That includes even the precepts. In Zazen, we let go of the self-improvement, other-improvement project. We sit and we meet everything exactly as it is, and allow the other side of this coin from Shunryu Suzuki to become clear to us. This side that we so doubt, we so disbelieve, that you are also perfect, exactly as you are. Sweating, pouring with sweat, shaking with cold. We find the perfection exactly thus. Thank you.